loud noise.
Greetings, Erna Files. 61 years ago today, that song by The Shadows, which we can't say the name of because it sounds very rude in Romanian, let's call it Picior Tapa, reached number one in the UK music charts, and at number two was also The Shadows, but this time as backing band for Cliff Richard with Summer Holiday. And on this day, Constantinople was renamed Istanbul. It was built as Byzantium around 657 BC, then renamed Constantinople in the 4th century after Constantine the Great made the city his capital. But the Turkish city of Istanbul officially received its present name on this day in 1930. And on this day in 1964, Madame Tussauds Wax Museum London unveiled wax figures of the Beatles. Those same figures later appeared on the cover for that famous album, the Sgt. Pepper, Lonely Hearts Club Band, got that right. And also on this day in 1866, the first ambulance went into service in the United States for patients in Cincinnati, Ohio. Actually, we went further back and found that Reuters found that Spanish forces transported patients with carts during the siege of Malaga in 1487. But actually, if you want to go even further back, there's evidence of forced transport of those psychiatric problems in 900 AD by the Anglo-Saxons, who transported patients in a hammock-based cart.
Ooh.
Also, 61 years ago today, in 1963, off the coast of Sunderland, northeast England, a major event, the sea froze. It has not done that before or since. Coincidentally or not, on that same day, our guest was born. And happy birthday to Lady Gaga, 38 today. And yes, a different voice this week, but fear not, the guy who normally runs this show, he's actually sitting about 5 feet away from me at the moment, because the guest this week is none other than your usual host, Steve Allison.
Hey, hello. The idea was, I thought, okay, because it's my birthday, so I'm not going to do the work today. I'm not going to host the show, you know. It's
like, happy birthday, Stevie. Happy birthday, Stevie. Happy birthday, Stevie. You're getting old.
Okay, anyway, but so you're going to host the show for me, and I'm just going to sit back and talk more than the guest speaks.
Yeah,
more than
the best laid plans of mice and men. You thought you were going to get away with it. We'll see if we find some questions for you. You could have interviewed yourself, of course. Did you ever think of that?
That with some clever editing. Yeah.
You never thought. Different voices, you never know. But there we are. So we are going to follow the same format. We're going to go through the throwback, money, 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 chaotic, quixotic, exotic, and then the future. So we're not going to deviate. We're straight into what everyone is used to. But firstly, the question which you always ask, Steve, and which threw me off, actually, when you asked me, who do you think you are?
I'm about to be thrown off now because I've never asked myself that question.
It's a tough one.
Who do I think I am? I think I'm incredibly lucky. That's who I think I am. Okay, I got to do, for a living, something I really love to do, which is working in IT, and now I get to do one evening a week, at least. The other thing I love to do, which is to mess around in a radio studio.
That sounds fantastic.
And I have a delicious wife at home who lets me do this.
She's patient. Is that what you're trying to say?
Should we ask her?
We might. She could come on next week. Okay, so let's start then with the throwback.
Expat life.
Throwback. Tell me about your childhood.
So let's start with a childhood, as usual. Where were you born?
I was born, okay, Sunderland Maternity Hospital.
Uh-huh.
Very, very unglamorous, let's say. When is it also important? It's that day the sea froze.
Yeah.
Right, now this leads into a story. Okay, now, one day before I was born, Mum, God rest her soul, she was in the hospital having a checkup. And the doctor said, you've got easily another month to go. Don't worry about it. You'll be back here in a month. Now, the next day I was here.
Oh, you're impatient guy.
The very next day. Now, it really annoyed my parents because some people know this, but the way the tax year works in the UK, or maybe it still does, I don't know, was April to April, right? Now, if you had a child somewhere in the year, you got tax relief from back to the beginning of the tax year, right? So this is why so many children in the UK are born in March.
Oh, that's something I didn't know.
It's not because of holiday romances in June, right? No, it's because of the tax rules. Now, my parents didn't want to play that game. They planned that I was going to be born in April. And I said, right, so you bloody think so.
There
boy. And I popped in March.
Always someone upsetting the apple cart right from the start. Is that something about it? I mean, your parents, what did they do? What were their roles? What were their jobs?
It was a coal mining town, so Dad was a coal miner.
Oh, okay.
Until one day he said, I'm not going down that hole ever again.
Right.
And he became a maintenance engineer on Caterpillar earth movers.
Okay.
And that kind of thing. And mum worked in various shops in various roles, shop manageress kind of thing. Electrical company, that was useful because when I was a teenager, I was fascinated by electricals and electronics, and my mum worked in a shop that sold this stuff.
Oh, fantastic. So you used to go in the shop
and, go in there and play
and
with it.
Put wires together and try things out.
Yeah.
And
almost burned it down three times.
I was about to say, I'm sure that had to be there somewhere. But this was, what time, when was this? 80s? When was this around?
Let's think. We're talking about mid 70s.
Mid to late 70s. Okay. And so your dad, this is around Thatcher time. So this was the winter of discontent.
Yes. That
Thatcherism,
kind of,
all that going
Thatcher
on miners.
79, I think, when Thatcher came along and things started to look a bit shaky even then. I mean, imagine I'm genetically programmed to dislike that woman intensely, let's say. Because of where I grew up and what she did to the town, except I'm a bit conflicted. And there are people listening now in my hometown who are going to be shocked and might never speak to me again when they hear what I'm about to say. In the middle of the miners' strike, 1984, I was given an opportunity to move away from Newcastle to Manchester, Sunderland, to Manchester, and start a job in a software company, a small software company that could only really exist because of the policies that Margaret Thatcher had put in place. She shut down the coal mine. She got into that fight with that Scargill guy, right? And he also didn't really play the best hand. There's a long discussion there, I think. Part of it was Thatcher and Scargill were so dead against each other that no one was going to win that battle.
But the point is, your own family were, I mean, if your father was a coal miner, then presumably would have been pretty anti-Thatcher.
But completely. By this point, my dad had stopped being a coal miner, but my brother was.
Right.
He was the big wage earner in the family. But still, everyone in that town was so anti-Thatcher. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But of course, she offered me... While she was shutting down the town that I grew up in, she created the conditions that allowed me to get out of it.
So where do you stand on her now, then? That's a tough one.
It's very tough. She had to do
divisive. Let's say she was so divisive for everyone.
She had to do some necessary things, right? She maybe didn't go about them all in the right way.
Okay.
But she may have come on a little bit too strong sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't deny that the thing she had, that it was necessary. The society had to change.
And the thing is that you were growing up in that was the environment in which you were growing up.
Yeah.
And that was a sort of environment, I mean, see, you were at school? When were you at school before that all happened, did you?
Yes, I was, let's say, in a high school, at the grammar school, was 74 to 81.
Right. Okay, so it covered, you know, around that time as well.
Around that time, yeah.
So, okay. And school itself, then, did you enjoy school? Did you? how was it for you?
You know, the further into the past it gets, the less horrific it feels. Does that make sense?
yeah.
I don't know if I was very particularly keen on it at the time. It was it was something to do during the day.
Okay.
Discipline, well, it was necessary, I understood that. It was 800 people all gathering together to be told something, not necessarily taught anything. Mm. Does that make sense?
It does indeed.
But I love the sciences.
Okay.
I was happy with the physics. I was happy with the chemistry, because chemistry is just physics.
Right.
And I was happy with the biology, because biology is just chemistry and chemistry is just physics.
Okay.
And it's all just maths.
Okay. That's a fun discussion there. But, and what about your dreams? Were you a big dreamer?
here's what I wanted to do. I liked electronics and I liked music.
Okay.
Right. Once I got over the I want to be an architect, which was beaten out of me when somebody told me you will never be able to draw in a million years, so stop with the architect business. So that was gone. Music and electronics. Moog synthesizers.
Okay.
Were a big thing. And I was just determined, I'm going to work for that guy.
Okay.
And I'm going to build synthesizers. That's what I'm going to do. And then two things happened in 1977. One, I discovered computers. Two, Moog went bankrupt.
Okay. That was not a good plan then.
So I decided maybe that's not going to work. Now Moog is alive and well and thriving again. And who knows? I might have a career change.
Brilliant. Well, talking of music, shall we...
We should.
We should have the first one. Tell us what the first one is.
Right, okay. Now, this is 1981, right? I remember when there was an album released by a band called The Human League, and I saw it in the record shop. The packaging was astonishing. This brilliant, white, pure design, very close-cropped photographs, the fonts, the colours, the everything about it. It was just a joyful thing to behold. Vinyl, 12-inch LP back in those days. Right? Mm. So, and I took one look at this record and thought, this is going to sound amazing. And then I took it home and I stuck it on my stereo. And it did sound amazing. And I realised when it started like this, I thought, I'm listening to the sound of the future right now.
Okay. And here it is.
And then I lost it. I lost the album. But my lovely colleagues at Fine Business Consulting bought me the album yesterday. So now I've got it again.
Wow.
So let's listen to The Things That Dreams Are Made Of by the Human League. Bye.
Take time to see the wonders of the world. To see the things you've only ever heard of. Dream life the way you think it ought to be.
Norman Wisdom, Johnny, Joey, Dee Dee, the Ramones, good times.
Good people gather around Radio Gorilla.
Expat life.
Money, money, money.
61 isn't old.
Oh, yes, it is.
And after the song, The Things That Dreams Are Made Of by the Human League, here we go into Money, Money, Money. So, Steve.
It wasn't much of it. Just say money once. You didn't.
Well, how did you start to earn money? Maybe not much of it at that point. But,
I was offered a job in Manchester in a software company.
After all that IT interest then was really coming to the fore.
Yeah, basically. I self-taught, in this stuff with the home micros, but I didn't have any qualifications, none at all, which was a problem. So I found a training course, which I got onto, where I was going to get the qualifications, but I didn't finish the course because I was offered a job before it ended.
Okay.
But I got the job, but I didn't get the qualification because he took me away 1 week before the end of the course.
So you never got this qualification?
No. No. My mum's got more IT qualifications than I have.
Okay, don't tell anyone that. Right. Okay. So what was the job? What?
Programming in a language called COBOL.
Aha, that's sort of going back a bit, aren't we?
I think I'm one of the few people still alive who can speak it.
Okay. And what did you do on that job? This was pretty much your first job, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was 21 years old and I was dropped into writing. The first thing I did actually was to count the beer that Boddington's Brewery sold. It was their planning and delivery system.
Okay.
And sales. So that was counting beer. What's not to like?
You counting beer. That sounds a chip off the old block.
And then I ended up putting a system in a coal mine in Zimbabwe.
Oh. Yeah. Well, so you were going abroad. So you they were sending you places?
I was already, after 18 months working there, I was already...
You're asleep. Already traveling. So you're...
Not even 18. 14 months after I joined the... I was already... First time I jumped on an aeroplane was just to fly to Victoria Falls.
Oh, my goodness. That must have been pretty exciting.
It was
exciting. Had you travelled a lot before?
No, not at all.
Not at all?
Never been on an aeroplane.
What did that feel like?
It was very interesting, especially on an old Viscount travelling from Harare to Victoria Falls.
Viscount!
It was one of those with massive windows. It felt like you were sitting in a greenhouse.
Oh, my God. Were they safe?
I'm still here.
That's all right. Glad to hear it, yeah. So what other projects you had?
After the coal mine, which was amazing, I spent about a month in the UK and then flew off to Ghana to a gold mine to do the same thing.
These places so exotic, different. I mean, it wasn't exactly going to France or Germany or anything like that. That was just off to...
Imagine the gold mine. After going in the coal mine, and grew up in coal mines, so I know what they're like in a coal mining town. So gold mine, it's off to work we go. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. It's going to be great in the gold mine. No, the gold mine was a place of extreme poverty.
Oh, it was weird. Yeah, of course, yeah.
Very, very strange. Mm. But we went for a visit down the mine. They took us on a tour. So we walked down a ladder, approximately a kilometre deep.
Good heavens.
At the bottom of it, there was a tunnel with a lid, and it was water. But you could feel that under the water was a railway line, small. And we were told, if you see the lights and hear the rumble of the train, step back against the wall and make sure your toes are not across the track.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
So here's what happened, right? So we're down there, and we've got miners' lamps on and all of this stuff. And we hear the rumble of the train. We see the lamps, and we step back. And the driver of the train clearly saw our lights reflecting down the tunnel, and he shouted for us, "Oh, buddy, lads, get out the way!" And I'm like, hang on a minute, that sounds like a familiar accent.
Exactly.
So we stopped and we got chatting. Where are you from?
My goodness.
Sunderland. Really? No, not Sunderland, no. Houghton. Yeah, which street?
No.
Whatever. Here's the thing, right? I lived in number 4 of Briar, and out of my front window was a piece of grass, and about 50 metres away was number 4 Pine, the next street.
No.
And if I looked out of my front window, I looked into his front window. We grew up looking into each other's front windows, and we had no idea that we existed until we met 1 kilometre below the ground in a gold mine in Ghana.
That is absolutely incredible. That's it. That to go all that way to meet you pretty much your next door neighbour,
yes.
Then most of us would just sort of walk around the corner. But to go to Ghana for the privilege.
As my dad always used to say to me, you never take the easy way, do you?
That sounds like you. So was it fun, the work in this place? Did you enjoy it?
I really did. I mean, we were, it was extreme. I mean, okay, poverty-stricken environment. Very interesting people, are beautiful people, and happy and lively and kind and good and keen to learn. We were keen to teach them.
I see.
And one of the things, their local money, the local dress, right? This is a story. They don't have pockets, right? They wear kind of like saris, okay?
Okay.
They have pockets. Yeah. And the first thing I noticed was the kids going to school and they put the balance pencil case on their head and walk to school. And I thought that was so cute.
Yeah.
The day we're coming back from the visit down the mine after I'd met the guy, my next door neighbor, here, it's payday. So we drive past the pay office and the guys get their pay, right? And it's some banknotes.
Right.
And this guy, completely bald little guy, gets his pay and he got no pockets. So he puts his pay, his banknote, on his head. But so it doesn't blow away, he puts a stone on the top.
Oh, you're kidding.
And walks home like that.
You can't imagine that happening down Oxford Street.
I was laughing so hard that I couldn't take a photo of it. Even though I had a camera in my hand, I was helpless with
laughter. How incredible. Did you... So Ghana, I mean, all the exotic places, did you go to other places as well?
After Ghana, we got a job with the Ministry of Defence, and that meant I had to basically ship to Copenhagen for a year.
Oh, well, sounds a tough...
Which was not bad.
Sounds very tough.
And then working in... two shipyards, one in Plymouth, Devonport, and one in Edinburgh, Rosyth. We had to work in a place which was supposed to be midway between the two, a Bath.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Anyway, but then we were flipping from Plymouth, Bath, Edinburgh. Edinburgh is where I found the fourth bridges. I love bridges. My favourite bridge, the fourth railway bridge.
Yeah.
And there's a little village at the south end of the bridge, South Queensbury. There's a pub there called the Hawes Inn. And I saw it in 1986, and I said, I'm going to retire into that pub. I'm going to buy it when I retire and live in it. It's not going to happen.
I was just about to say, well, it's still there, I assume.
About a year ago, I was in Edinburgh, and I stayed for one night in that pub. And that's probably the closest thing I'll ever get.
You never know. You never know. But okay, I'll take your word for that. Mm-hmm. And bridges, I guess, in Plymouth, you would have seen the Tamar Bridge.
Yes.
Because that's my neck of the woods, actually,
right,
Plymouth,
of course,
and Liskard.
Yes.
Yeah, I know very well. So, great city. And also further north, you go to Edinburgh? Yeah, that was where you were in Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, working at the Rosyth. Edinburgh, where we used to... Used to get the Scots don't like the English, right? And I don't blame them. I really don't blame them. We used to hear these little voices. We'd be sat in the hotel bar, and we'd hear the young ladies behind the bar going, "You boys might not be by any chance English, are you?" And we're like, "What's the correct answer here?"
I know something about that because I was in Derry or Londonderry for a time, and it was the same sort of thing when you're in various parts of the city where not everyone likes English, and you have to be a little bit cautious. So I know the feeling actually very well.
Yeah, it's not something we suffer from here, is it?
No, thank goodness. No, that's great. Okay, I think it's time for the next record.
Time's flying by, isn't it?
It certainly does. And this is Byron. Granita and Granita.
Well, here's the thing. I was talking with Bogdan the other day. One of the first musicians I heard here was Ad Amelia. Loved Ad Amelia. Writes these amazing songs, usually quite short. Sings them just her and an acoustic guitar. Beautiful little folky things.
Right.
And this song really absolutely, it caught me. But many years later, Byron, who's another band that I absolutely love, did a cover version of it. And they took the song to a completely different place. And it's
gorgeous. Here we are, Byron, Granita and Renita.
Scoate din graniță și gata. Ești păcălit că n-ar ști că am o țară în graniță și o graniță în graniță
graniță, țara în graniță. Și gata. M-aș stabili lângă o altă graniță, le-aș scoate din graniță.
Poftim brânza românească, deschidem vinul românesc, o zi întreagă și nu numai, oferite de Carrefour ascultătorilor Radio Guerilla.
Pe cine vrei să omori, pe celălalt îți dau bani să zbori. De sus e mai simplu, de sus e mai simplu. Da, pariuri să piardă, da, cuvinte să mă creadă, da, benzină să-i trimit, da, motive să-i agit. Da, dă-mi vise să promit, da, merme să-i convin de cum mă simt, de cât mă simt. Dă-mi tot, dă-mi baie de foc, dă-mi tot, dă-mi jocuri de noroc, dă-mi tot, dă-mi să le dau să viseze, să mă distreze, să nu se întristeze. Dă-mi tot, dă-mi carne de tun, dă-mi tot, dă-mi bani de tutun, dă-mi tot, dă-mi să le dau să fumeze, să se calmeze și să mă urmeze. Dă-mi bani să cuceresc luni, ți-i dau să-i dai la nebun. Dă-mi timp să mă întind pe pământ, să fiu de neînfrânt până devin sfânt. Dă-mi tot, dă-mi paie de foc, dă-mi tot, dă-mi jocuri de noroc, dă-mi tot, dă-mi să le dau să viseze, să mă distreze, să nu se întristeze. Dă-mi tot, dă-mi carne de tun, dă-mi tot, dă-mi bani de tutun, dă-mi tot, dă-mi să le dau să fumeze, să se calmeze și să mă urmeze.
Poftim brânza românească, deschidem vinul românesc, o zi întreagă și nu numai, oferite de Carrefour ascultătorilor Radio Guerilla.
Expat Life, powered by those beautiful people at Radio Guerilla.
Expat life.
Chaotic. Quixotic.
Exotic.
And here we go. And back again and thinking more about the journey for Steve Allison, who for the first time is, well, no, second time actually.
Second time,
but yeah, a long time ago. But is certainly from a very long time ago, is in the chair himself as our guest. And we move, I think, now to the journey to Romania. How did you get here?
Okay, so after all of those exotic places that I was doing all those massive, great projects. Let's say the company profile changed a bit and we became developers for hire. Mm-hmm. Not big projects anymore, small ones. Here, a week there, a few days there, oh, so on and so on. One of the projects that we got to work on was back in the 90s. FARE was a European Union project, reimbursable funds.
Okay,
it was
yes.
a project for the Ministry of Agriculture. Our company got the job.
Okay.
To run a part of it, and it required some software. So I got the job of managing that part.
And
so basically said, where is it? Where is this in Romania? People were like, I'm not coming to work in Romania. No way, no way, no way. And I said, they said to me, this job in Romania. And I said, where's Romania? They said, okay, you don't know where it is. You've got That's nothing okay. against it, then have you? I said, no, I don't.
Best way to go.
Young, free, single, cool. What did I have to lose, right?
Fantastic.
Joined in and landed at the airport. In Otopen, mm-hmm. Which was very different back then. Yeah, and mm-hmm. I was met by this she's listening and she's going to hate it that I keep saying this. This curvaceous blonde lady
met me
at the airport.
Wait until you get home.
Yeah. And, so that's the first Romanian lady I ever met, saw, waiting for me at the airport because it was her job. 15 months later, we were married, and 28 years later, we still are.
How fantastic. 28 years.
28
many
married.
Absolutely super. And when you first met, was it sort of a volcano?
Absolutely.
Immediately, oh, what, straight away?
Yeah, you're thinking. It was like...
Oh.
No, it wasn't. Absolutely wasn't.
Wasn't that at all?
No. We just worked together in an office.
Right.
And then we met again at a party where things are different.
Mm-hmm.
I think it may have been ZZ Top.
Talking. Yeah.
Talking. She made me dance, which is something I think no one's ever made me capable of before or since. She actually dragged me onto the dance floor.
She's not managed to do it since then?
No, she has, but no one else has.
No one else has. She still has that power.
Yes.
Fantastic. But so, therefore, you met her. But, I mean, how long after you first met did you actually start dating?
About 4 months.
Okay.
Well, I was due to leave. My work here was done. I was due to go back to the UK. And that's it. Bye-bye. I'm gone. Mm. And in the final week, we met at this party.
Right.
And we spent the final week together, and she showed me things in Bucharest that I didn't realize were here. And I discovered in the final week of my 4 month project that Bucharest was an amazing place, and Romania was a beautiful country, and the people in it are gorgeous. I spent 4 months not knowing this, and I learned it all in a week. So then I went back to the England. That's it, new job, everything, bye bye. I'm gone.
You left.
I left, and then a week later, I bought a one way ticket back.
A one way ticket? How much? A week later?
About
that was it.
10 days later, I was back.
And was it her, or was it Romania that brought you back? Or probably a mixture of the two.
I'm guessing, let's say, it must have been about 98% her.
Yeah, there we are. But Romania, but therefore, because actually Romania was a very different place at that time.
It's grim and grey back in 94.
My first visit was 96. I remember there were five casinos. The Victoria Casino, I stayed there, and there were others. I remember very little else. There were the odd restaurant, but that was all there were, it seemed to me, just five casinos.
That seemed, and there were the tourists coming in to spend, to spend money at the casino. Not saying launder it. No. Spend it. It was like grim. I remember watching a BBC documentary. It was John Simpson, the reporter, who was standing at the entrance to the metro station in Piazza Victoria just after the revolution had... They just, got rid of the bad guy, let's say. And a student came out and John Simpson said, "So, how do you feel? You've got your freedom back." And the student said, "I feel confused because I don't know what to do with it."
Mm, exactly.
And it was and it was still felt a bit like that when I arrived four years later.
But a big change to now, though.
Oh, man. Then people started talking about NATO and EU accession. And the optimism came in, and the investment came in, and Bucharest turned from this grey, communist-looking place into any other modern European city in the space of a few years.
Mm-hmm. But not an easy journey.
No.
We must recognise that.
Not everything has changed for the better.
But for you, you were working on the FAR programme, but when you came back, presumably you weren't working on the FAR programme at that time. What happened?
After the FARI programme, when that finally ended, I just started throwing CVs around.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up working at Shell Petroleum, which is setting up a new office. And they wanted all of their IT infrastructure setting up. They had to use ICL. That was a global contract they had.
Right.
ICL in Bucharest at that point was a couple of students in a small room in an apartment somewhere. So the guy from Shell said, "We might need someone to keep an eye on them."
Okay.
"Can you help?" So I did.
And that was over around, I guess, around the millennium, was it?
This would have been 96, probably. 96, 96 until 97. We put the Shell stuff in, and then Shell Exploration were also here. So I did the same thing for them.
Okay.
But doing the thing like, for example, on the drilling rigs in the middle of nowhere. It was land-based rigs. I wasn't in the sea or anything, but it was a lot of fun. And then Shell Gas came. I did the same thing for them. And at some point during that, I found a Unilever found me.
Mm-hmm.
to help them with a project. And this project was, well, it was going to be a couple of days a week for a few months, and it was going to be all right. And then about 3 months later, I found myself as head of IT.
Wow. As it happened, just like that.
Yeah. The IT guy, let's say, left. Well, they had a roadmap. They had to retire. They had to retire certain people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was local, and I knew the stuff, and I ended up in charge.
Oh, fantastic.
And for a few years. And then, okay, then we Unilever outsourced its IT department. So I outsourced myself to myself.
So you were responsible for outsourcing yourself.
I outsourced
And not many
myself.
People can do that.
They basically said, we have to outsource it. Are you unhappy? And I said, well, I'll start with myself. And they said, are you serious? Well,
it's a good strategic move, it sounds like.
So I fired myself and went back as a contractor.
Oh,
pretty much like that. But
you
then
couldn't make it up.
We put the software live, the SAP system, we put it live, and then now my time at Unilever is really, really done. I'm going to spend 3 months at the seaside because I've been promising my wife and kids that that's what we're going to do. So we packed up the car. Now I'm technically unemployed and I can go. I took the money and I ran. Boosh.
For this long 3 month sojourn by the seaside.
4 days later, I was in the Unilever office in Liverpool.
Oh, couldn't believe it.
The phone rang. Can you get here tomorrow?
That must have upset the family. They all went.
No, I left them at the seaside. I don't think they cared.
Okay. But you also, you were working around the millennium and the Y2K and everything about that.
What a waste of money that wasn't. People say it was a total waste of money. No, nothing happened. It was a big anticlimax because care was taken, money was spent. But I do remember I was asked to do idiotic things like check the clock in the VCR in the boardroom.
And what happened? What if it went wrong?
Who's going to be watching videos on New Year's Day in the office? I mean, what's the point of that? But I do remember this is a weird thing. There was a task force of multinational companies set up where we would meet together, combine our forces and defeat the millennium bug. And we had the first, and I think probably the only meeting, actually. Part of the consortium was British American Tobacco.
Yep.
We had a meeting in there, in their big boardroom. Beautiful, exotic boardroom with like 50 places. And we sat down, and the guy who was the host, therefore chairing the meeting, he sat down and he said, let's all get started. But before we start, I think we should all sit back and enjoy a nice Camel.
A camel. So you all
cigarette. And then we noticed that at every chair around this boardroom table were two packs of Camel, light and ordinary. And he just lit it up and he just said, okay, no, we're not starting until we've all had a cigarette. What about the ones who don't smoke? Well, you can just sit and wait.
And that was that. And you all sat down.
Imagine
enjoyed,
that happening now.
You couldn't. I'm surprised it happened even then, to be honest with you. But what a great way to just relax for a moment. Yeah. Perhaps without smoking normally, but there you go. But as you said, there are many people who don't smoke
correct.
On that one. So they must have felt a bit left out, but there we are. I guess they survived.
Such it is. Yeah. And then, so what happened? Yeah, Unilever, long time. Quit. After that time when I thought I'd left Unilever and ended up being back there 4 days later, I think it was about another 10 years. Mm-hmm. Before finally, I could get away. And now, that's it. Unilever doesn't need me anymore. And not since 2016. Other things, which we'll talk about in a minute. We've got to get the music playing.
We have to get the music. The time's going on, and we'll hear about that a little bit later. This is the third, Raoul Cusack and Vali Rachila, The Lonesome Road Blues.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Vali Sir Blues Rachila and Raoul Cusack, too. Delicious musicians. They are just astonishingly good. And I saw them last Friday in Jazz Book. Just a guy with a piano and a guy with about 7 guitars, which he didn't. Blues. Authentic blues. And they recorded but on vinyl. This is coming from the vinyl. Listen. You can hear the vinyl.
Lonesome Road Blues, take two.
Listen to this.
And I cried under the willow tree. Then I faced the deep blue sea. my mama's dead, Papa can be found. My brother's on a county road. Said I done been to the long plank walk, and I'm on my way back home. Me to weep, Yuri calls me to moan, Yuri calls me to leave my home. I cried last night and the night before, and I cried, don't cry no more.
Thank you to Raoul Kushak, who sent me all the audio files from this album as a birthday present this morning. Cheers, Raoul. We have to do this now.
Expat Life, made in Bucharest, Romania. Heard all over the world.
Expat Life.
Next chapter.
So, the next chapter, the future. What does the future hold for Steve?
This shouldn't take very long to talk about. The future, I hope, is more of the same.
More of the same.
I'm loving it.
So, you're planning to stay in Romania?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
100. And 5 years' time, where will you be?
Here. And hopefully here. I mean, here, in this chair.
In the, okay, and in 10 years' time?
Probably in a little cottage somewhere, either at the Black Sea or in Transylvania.
And in 20 years' time, still?
In a wooden box, probably.
Oh, I don't believe that. I don't believe it. 1 second. Well, I've just got a few quick-fire questions for you. So I'm just going to give you a couple of alternatives just to finish. You're not going to get away that easy without answering a few sort of quick questions.
Psychoanalysis going on now.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't resist it at all. So, first of all, the obvious one, mountain or beach?
Beach.
Curry or roast?
Curry.
Ferrari or Rolls Royce?
Aston Martin.
Ah, cheat. That's not allowed.
Ferrari.
Ferrari, okay. Stoic or emotional?
Oh, that's a tricky one. Mm. Honestly, I'd like to think I'm stoic, but probably I'm emotional. No, I'm definitely emotional.
Yeah, emotional. At home or out and about?
At home.
At home? Mm. And culture or sport?
Oh, culture.
Okay, fantastic.
Definitely not sport.
Steve, it's been a privilege for me. What a fantastic, really, really have enjoyed the hour. What a fantastic life you've had.
It's been great to have someone else do the work for a change.
Really enjoyed it so much. But this is now really, we're handing back over to you. What have you got? Well, next, you're back in the chair next week. What have you got lined up?
Next week we have Irina Crocker. Now that sounds like her first name is Romanian, second name is English, is Romanian, married to an Englishman. Many people listening know Charlie Crocker. Yeah. He's been on this show. Yeah. It's his wife. He's going to talk about, well, you'll have to tune in because it's going to be quite a hell of a story.
Fantastic. Don't miss it, anyone. And our last piece of music is Fara Zaha.
Right, this I think, this should be the new Romanian national anthem. When they play this song, especially when they play it live, this is the emotional thing you were talking about before. I cannot be stoic when they play this live. It has me in tears. It is, and it's nascutli, but we were born free, and free we will always be.
Wonderful.
And this is why it should be.
Fantastic way to finish. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you, Sinclair. Okay. This is Sinclair Stevenson in the big chair there. We'll go out with Farah Zahar and nascutli, but listen to this.
Se schimbă viața uneori, se ascunde soarele între nori. Oricum ar fi, lumina tot o vezi.
Și nu ajunge doar să speri, tu trebuie să înveți să ceri, să lupți pentru ce crezi.
Chitara-mi sună de când viu, mai mult nu-mi trebuie să știu. Mai trag un fum și plec la drum.
Liber voi fi mereu, liber, dar pe Sunt un copil, sunt un artist, sunt pesimistul optimist. Și uneori mă vând pe două beri.
Sunt veșnic minus la bilanț și beau prea mult și ajung în șanț. În mult, prea multe seri.
Dar fiindcă astăzi ți-am cântat, mă simt al naibii de bogat. Hai, prietene!
Stay tuned for Room Every Hour. Young minds, fresh ideas.
Listen again to this and previous shows. Find us at expatlife.ro.
Expat Life.
New maps, please!
Good night, everybody!
Pentru limba română, apasă 1.